Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival this summer. This season, we've designed one of our richest and most enchanting musical journeys yet. Russian Reflections illuminates the great dialogue between Russia and the West, from which Russian classical music grew into one of the most beloved of all musical traditions. Russia's musical culture is as elusive as it is irresistible. The soul of Russian music is impossible to capture with words. It is utterly unique. No one could have invented such a confoundingly glorious tradition. Russia's music is the sui generis expression of her people's experiences. Yet at the same time, many of the elements that distinguish Russian music ultimately defy cultural boundaries: love and death, passion and pathos, struggle and triumph. This summer's seven concert programs bring together Russian and Western composers to magnify the universal resonance of Russia's musical culture. We'll hear the romantic pathos of Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich alongside Schumann, Fauré, and Dvorak. We'll encounter the sophisticated elegance of Tchaikovsky next to music by Mozart and Mendelssohn. We'll marvel at the impeccable craftsmanship of Prokofiev, Taneyev, and Johannes Brahms. Each of these juxtapositions will cast Russia's musical identity into sharp relief, while also revealing an essential character that transcends any cultural divide. Audio Notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
Composed in the same year as Tchaikovsky's death and dedicated to the memory of a great artist, Sergei Rachmaninoff's Trio Elegiac captures an essential component of the Russian musical identity. From Glinka to Shostakovich and beyond, Russia's composers have depicted melancholia with both a dignified nobility and devastating dolor. Yet, through their empathy and perseverance, Russia's musical lamentations likewise extol the indomitability of the human spirit, ultimately uplifting the listener from even the darkest despair. Evident in Mussorgsky's chilling Songs and Dances of Death, these qualities likewise emerge in the music of Fauré and the Swiss-American composer Ernest Bloch.
The compact frame of Gabriel Fauré's Elegy, Opus 24, its brevity, intimate scoring, and frank designation as an elegy, belies its expressive range. The work seems to honor grief as a multifaceted thing and depicts it as such, not prosaically, according to the classic stages of denial, anger, and so on, but in more poetical fashion. And herein lies Fauré's mastery. He possesses the sensibility to probe, with economy and exquisite subtlety, the depth of human emotion, giving graceful voice to our innermost feelings. The Elegy, cast in the somber key of C minor, begins with a mournful cello melody, paced by a solemn progression of chords in the piano. The theme's melodic contour traces a slow descent, as if insisting on its own dignity as it approaches its nadir. A contrasting middle section modulates to A-flat major, but the music retains its melancholia, as if offering a tearful remembrance of better times. A sudden anguished eruption heralds the return of the opening melody, transformed now from a somber dirge to a piercing cry. The piano spins a flurry of 32nd note triplets. The cello proclaims the theme in its keening upper register, fortissimo con grandezza. For the Swiss-born American composer Ernest Bloch, cultural and artistic identity were intrinsically linked. Bloch, born in Geneva in 1880 to Jewish parents, found his musical voice in a series of large-scale works known as his Jewish cycle. These included psalm settings for voice and orchestra, Israel, a symphony with five vocal soloists, and his most famous work, Shlomo, for cello and orchestra. Bloch once wrote, quote, "What interests me is the Jewish soul, the enigmatic, ardent, turbulent soul that I feel vibrating throughout the Bible. It is all this that I endeavor to hear in myself and transcribe in my music, the venerable emotion of the race that slumbers way down in our souls." End quote. In 1923, Bloch composed Baal Shem, Three Pictures of Hasidic Life, for violin and piano. Bloch composed the work in memoriam his deceased mother. The second piece in the Baal Shem triptych is titled Nigun, literally improvisation or melody. Per Kabbalah, melody represents a spiritual medium, empowering the faithful to achieve a state of transcendence. Song is consequently a vital component of Hasidic worship. Bloch's Nigun captures this reverence for song in its oratorical violin writing. The work begins on a dramatically charged note. Harmonic gestures and melodic flourishes immediately evoke Jewish folk music. Most ears will quickly detect the telltale grace notes and augmented seconds in the work's opening measures. Above rumbling tremolanti in the piano, the violin intones its first utterance like a cantor calling the faithful to prayer. Here, as throughout the Nigun, the violin conjures a vocal expressivity. The work reverberates from start to finish with a take-no-prisoners dramatic power. As the music proceeds, the violinist's melodic ornamentation, double-stopped melodic figures, and increasingly virtuosic flourishes seem to approach religious ecstasy. After its most fervent declamation, Nigun ends with a meditative Amen. Modest Mussorgsky was one of the five composers known collectively as the Mighty Handful, a group that sought to create a distinctly Russian musical aesthetic. Musicologist and Mussorgsky scholar Robert Aldani moreover credits him as, quote, the most strikingly individual Russian composer of the late 19th century, and an avatar of modernism for the generation of Debussy and Ravel, end quote. And indeed, the repertoire bears witness to these latter composers' fascination with Mussorgsky, whose most famous composition, Pictures from an Exhibition, is equally well known in Ravel's orchestration as in the original version for solo piano. Mussorgsky most excelled in the composition of opera and song. In these arenas, he developed a technique of vocal writing at once lyrical and true to the cadence and inflection of Russian speech. These qualities are nowhere in stronger evidence than in the starkly intense Songs and Dances of Death. This cycle of four songs sets text by the Russian poet Arseny Golonishchev-Kutuzov. Each poem personifies death entering a mundane scenario to claim a new victim. Befitting such morbid subject matter, Mussorgsky's music is unrelentingly dark. Originally composed for voice and piano, as we'll hear at the festival this summer, Songs and Dances of Death also exists in a later orchestral version, prepared by Rimsky-Korsakov and Alexander Glazunov. The set begins with a mother's worried lullaby to her sick child. Haunting chromatic lines, punctuated by pregnant silences, set the sleepless scene. A child is groaning, reads the text. A candle, burning out, dimly flickers onto the surroundings. Death appears in the form of a babysitter, offering to relieve the tired mother. Have a little nap. I'll sit instead of you. You've failed to pacify the child. I'll sing more sweetly than you. The music becomes harried as the mother anxiously resists. Be gone, you damned thing. With your tenderness, you'll kill my joy. Her entreaties are for naught. Death finally reassures her, look, he fell asleep with my quiet singing. In the second song of the cycle, death masquerades as a lover serenading a dying young woman from outside her window. Mussorgsky signals this serenade's morbidity without delay. The song begins with an eerie single bell toll. The subsequent lilting accompaniment is shaded by ghostly harmonies. Yeah, I need to tell you all my life. The music turns gallant as death sings, "In the gloom of captivity, severe and stifling, your youth is fading away. Oh, I'll suffocate you in my strong embraces. Listen to my seductive chatter. Be silent. You are mine." The following song takes the form of a trepak, a traditional Ukrainian folk dance. Here, an old peasant drunkard is caught in a blizzard. Death invites him to dance. From the opening measures, the ominous accompaniment forewarns of what lies ahead, accenting the song's opening strain with an allusion to the Dies Irae plainchant melody from the Latin Mass for the Dead. Dies Irae, Dies Irae, solvete cum infamia. The music turns jaunty as death sings into the peasant's ear, "Oh, my little wretched man, got drunk, stumbled along the road, but the witch blizzard has risen furiously and driven you from the glade into the dense forest. Lie down, curl up, and fall asleep, my dear." Spiraling turbulence driven by quick chromatic runs reflect the rising inclemency of the storm as death claims the old peasant. The Field Marshal, the cycle's final number, is also its most vigorous. Marked vivo alla guerra, the song portrays death as a commanding military officer. At the song's climax, Death, surveying the battlefield, triumphantly sings, "The battle is finished. I won over everyone. You all submitted before me, soldiers. Life has made you quarrel. I have reconciled you." The program continues with music by one of Russian music's most cherished composers, Sergei Rachmaninoff.
I think what makes Rachmaninoff a very interesting character in this Russian sequence of composers, so to say, is that all his life he was marked by two aspects of his personality that kind of fall short of his own desires.
Cellist Dmitry Atapin.
One was that he strongly believed himself to be the heir apparent of Tchaikovsky. And he lived all his life in the shadow of Tchaikovsky. He felt very supported by Tchaikovsky in his early life. If I'm not mistaken, Tchaikovsky attended a premiere of the young Rachmaninoff's opera, Aleko. Tchaikovsky supposedly leaned into the audience. He was sitting in one of the balconies, and he leaned into the audience from his balcony and very demonstratively was clapping to make sure that everyone around saw how much he appreciated Rachmaninoff's composition. So Rachmaninoff always felt very much in the shadow and indebted to Tchaikovsky. On the other hand, unlike Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff was one of the greatest pianists of the late 19th and early 20th century. He was very much recognized as a piano virtuoso of unbelievable level, and that's what his career was made by. And so I think Rachmaninoff also lived in this time of feeling like he needs to be a composer first and foremost, and he needs to prove himself in the eyes of everyone that he's just as good as or better as Tchaikovsky, to live up to the image of his mentor, and on the other hand, to prove that, you know, it's not because he's a great pianist who plays his own piano concerto 1,500 times around the world, but it is because of his symphonies, it is because of his choral works, even some of his chamber music, that he's worthy of entering the pantheon of Russian music.
In 1893, Tchaikovsky, revered then as now as Russia's greatest composer, heard the 20-year-old Sergei Rachmaninoff's orchestral fantasy, The Rock, and offered to conduct it the following season. But the performance never materialized. Tchaikovsky died later that fall. 60,000 mourners applied for tickets to attend Tchaikovsky's funeral. Rachmaninoff joined his compatriots in grieving their country's loss, paying singular tribute with his trio Elegiac in D minor, opus 9. Befitting a tribute from a rising young composer to a revered master, the trio Elegiac is modeled after Tchaikovsky's own piano trio, itself dedicated to the memory of a great artist, the pianist and conductor Nikolai Rubinstein. Like Tchaikovsky's trio, the trio Elegiac comprises three imposing movements: a large-scale sonata form first movement, a set of variations, and a resolute finale. Each trio also casts the piano as its center of gravity, though this is likewise a signature of Rachmaninoff's oeuvre at large. Indeed, just as it nods to Tchaikovsky, the trio Elegiac strongly exhibits Rachmaninoff's artistic individuality. The moderato first movement begins with a funereal piano figure, marked by an obsessive descending four-note chromatic motif. The cello and piano issue stone-faced melodic utterances in turn. The opening procession gradually builds to feverish intensity. Then, following a slow transition, the second theme appears. Marked allegro moderato, this music begins with the vitality of a folk dance. But quickly escalates to an impassioned cry, fueled by clanging chords in the piano and furious repeated 16th note figures in the strings. The outburst subsides and yields to a radiant new musical idea. Against the backdrop of a shimmering piano accompaniment, the cello and violin present long-breathed melodic lines, derived from the folk-like second theme's anapestic, or short-short-long, rhythmic motif. From here, through the subsequent development and recapitulation, the movement might be heard to traverse the oft-cited five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. That's a model, by the way, that came into use several decades after Rachmaninoff's trio. If this gleaming music to close the exposition shows the bereaved in denial of his loss, what follows is surely anger. The piano transforms the second theme into a thing of radiant beauty, as if in avoidance of the prevailing grief. After a cadenza-like passage in the piano, depression sets in. The development's final andante passage is quiet and forlorn. The movement ends with an aggrieved acceptance as the piano icily reprises the opening theme, accompanied now by muted strings. The second movement presents eight variations on a theme from The Rock, the orchestral work of Rachmaninoff that Tchaikovsky was to conduct. The piano presents the poignant theme, a naive, heartfelt lullaby, or perhaps a hymn. The Allegro First Variation turns bright and optimistic as the strings issue flowing melody above a quietly bubbling piano accompaniment. The freely musing second variation is set again in the piano alone. Grandiose chords punctuate wandering, semi-improvisatory melodic elaborations. The puckish energy of the third variation, marked Allegro Scherzando, evokes Mendelssohn's trademark Midsummer Night's Dream scherzo style. The fourth variation casts the third in sharp relief, answering the devilish piano runs and pizzicato chords with muted strings, like a warm halo around a cherubic series of chords in the piano. The strings remain muted in the fifth variation as the cello takes the melody, turning the theme into a rustic tune. Following the Allegro Vivace sixth variation, a refreshing sea breeze buoyed by sweeping triplets in the piano, the seventh variation turns moribund. This music nods askance to the first movement's dour opening. Violin and cello join in a plaintive duet. The piano offers only periodic interjections, as if to emphasize the music's sudden barrenness. The cello begins the final variation, bringing the theme closer still to the trio's opening. Augmented seconds hint at Jewish folk music. The trio's final movement begins with a muscular piano introduction, big bravura chords that herald Rachmaninoff's concertante writing for the piano throughout the movement. The ensemble steadily builds to the finale's dramatic climax before the devastating denouement, a haunting remembrance of the music that began the trio, now with strings and octaves and the piano in fuller voice. What had begun as a somber funeral procession reappears as the work's most intense outpouring of sadness. These final cries abate, violin and cello replace their mutes, and the piano ends the trio on a pianissimo D minor chord. After the trio elegiac's fiercest roar comes its most overpowering moment, a deafening final silence. Thank you. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Foray's Elegy, performed by Leslie Parnas and Charles Wadsworth. Mussorgsky's Songs and Dances of Death, performed by Morris Robinson and Ken Noda. Rachmaninoff's Trio Elegiac, performed by Alessio Bax, Elmar Oliveira, and Paul Watkins, and Prokofiev's Flute Sonata, performed by Ransom Wilson and Frederick Chu, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Bloch's Nigun, performed by Hagai Shaham and Aaron Ares, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Brahms's String Quintet No. 2 in F Major, performed by the Hagen Quartet and Gerard Causset, and Taneyev's Piano Quintet, performed by Vadim Repin, Ilya Gringoltz, Nobuko Imai, Lynn Harrell, and Mikhail Pletnev, appears courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.